I am the land. I waited silently in the womb, the water of the praying deep, while the Creator Spirit hover overhead.
Then one day the waters burst, and I appeared above the waters, alive and excited, as the Spirit gave me a name, land.
I was then illuminated by the Spirit, and I gave birth to all kinds of living plants, animals, birds, and insects.
The waters around me also gave birth to fish, corals, crabs, and even whales.
In the sky above me, the Spirit inserted bright lights for life to flourish within me.
I am land. I not only gave birth to all kinds of land beings, I was also invited by the Creator Spirit to be a partner and create human land, human land beings.
What an event. Human land beginning were born in our image. Spirits and land united in living creatures called human beings.
Yes, I am land, filled with the Spirit and very much alive with all forms of life.
Thank you. One of the possibilities of the contemplative tradition and contemplative practices is that we can learn how to listen. We can listen and we don't need to react straight away. We can listen even as big emotions are rising within us, as thoughts and opinions and reactions are swirling and moving and raging and whispering. We can notice those things and keep listening. Later this year, we are having a referendum on a First Nations voice to Parliament. It will be yet another betrayal of Indigenous peoples if there is a voice, but we don't know how to listen to it. Decolonizing is the work of unraveling and dismantling the destructive impact of colonization on our ways of living and thinking. In decolonizing work, we need to bring all of our contemplative attention. That's the invitation this evening, as we hear about some decolonizing work that is being done on the first chapter of Genesis. This creation story from Genesis is one of the big formative stories for Christians. Many of us have heard it a lot. It tells us something about the beginning, about what God had in mind when the world began and all things were created. If we take it to heart, our understandings about this story affect our attitudes and behaviours towards land, God, creatures and plants, light and dark, and people. These are foundational beliefs, and they have big implications for how we act now in this time and place. Auntie Anne Patel Gray is a descendant of the Bidjara Kari Kari people of Queensland, a First Nations biblical scholar and head of the School of Indigenous Studies at the University of Divinity, amongst other things. In recent times, she has been working with First Nations people and non-Indigenous folk on decolonizing the biblical narrative, and she's begun publishing a series of books, theology books, under that title. This is the first volume. I don't know if you're going to be able to see that. The poem we just heard from Uncle Den and Suzanne and the insights that I'm sharing here tonight are largely taken from the first volume in this series. They are the fruit of people working together, looking through a decolonized lens and uncovering a theology that is born from the land and is embedded in the land. I'm keen to draw your attention to it because I find it very good news. I encourage you to read the book for yourselves to gain a fuller understanding, and I will do my best to represent their ideas accurately here. So, how have Auntie Anne, the Rainbow Spirit Elders, and their collaborators approached this decolonizing work? Firstly, they point out that the Bible has been used as a tool of colonization. It has been used to justify all sorts of atrocities, including dispossessing people from land, abuse and pollution of land and its plants and animals, and demonizing First Nations cultures and their spiritual insights and practices, just to name a few. If the Bible is to have any meaning for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples as a revelation of God, it is important to look at how it has also been subject to agendas and prejudices of colonizers through the ages. Colonization can only take place if those involved believe certain things are okay. For example, it's okay to invade and take over land if the people of that land are not using it in a way you think is worthwhile. It's okay to extract wealth from colonized land and not share it equally or remove it overseas. It's okay to impose one's own language, culture, and religion on other people and treat them as inferior. When I talk about a colonizing mindset, I am talking about these kind of beliefs, which color how we interpret the world. Decolonizing the biblical narrative involves firstly looking at how the stories have been translated and whether the translator has been coming from a colonizing mindset. Secondly, decolonizing the biblical narrative involves looking at whether the people who wrote down the stories in our Bibles were coming from a colonizing mindset themselves. The Israelite people in biblical times were both colonizers and colonized. We can read about how the Promised Land was inhabited by Canaanites before the Israelite people took it over, on the understanding that God had promised it to them. In our current understanding, we would call this colonization. And Genesis was written by Israelites who were themselves invaded by Babylon and dispossessed. Thirdly, Auntie Anne and her collaborators identify hints of what they call an ancestral narrative in the Bible text. She defines an ancestral narrative as a story that existed before the influence of later colonizers and which has survived in some parts of the stories passed down to us today. In this first part of Genesis, we will see how these decolonizing approaches change our familiar reading of the creation story. In the reading we heard tonight, which is Auntie Anne's translation, God began to transform the sky and the land. Usually in verse 1, the Hebrew word bara is translated as create. God began to create the heavens and the earth. The impression we get is that there was nothing, and then God created something out of nothing. Now, if you are a First Nations listener, what might you be reminded of when the story says that in the beginning, there was a place with nothing and nobody in it? Who else came to a place and declared it empty and uninhabited? The myth of Terra Nullius, the empty land, was used to justify colonization of these lands, whose people sustain the oldest continuing culture in the world. So instead of translating the word bara as create, we look to verse 1, which tells us that the land was a formless mass. In light of this, Auntie Anne and her collaborators follow the lead of the Rainbow Spirit Elders, who preferred to speak of how the wind of God hovered over the formless mass and transformed it. The land which was then revealed came alive with the abundance of life that the story goes on to describe. Before we go on, however, let's return to our traditional readings, which refer to God creating the heavens and the earth. Now, what image comes to mind when you hear the word heavens? Does this conjure up clouds, angels, lots of white and light, harps, up there somewhere with all the celestial beings? And yet the story here is really describing a canopy that separates the water below, from the seas, from the water above, the rain. Today we call this canopy the sky. It's an everyday word, not a special super spiritual word. Some of us have a lot of cultural baggage that puts God up there somewhere a long way away in a place that doesn't look like anything we can imagine. How do we relate to this God? How do we imagine this God relates to us? And what about the word earth? I wonder how many of us think of that famous photograph of a blue ball hovering in space, planet Earth, taken in 1972 from the Apollo 17 spacecraft. But this image and understanding is very recent. The writers of the Genesis story were not thinking about a planet. They were thinking about something much more like what we think of when we hear the word land. It's an interesting contrast, isn't it? In the beginning, God created a planet and a fabulous but distant celestial realm out of nothingness. Or, in the beginning, God transformed a formless mass waiting in the deep into the land and the sky. The emphasis that Auntie Anne and her collaborators draw out from this Genesis story is that the land is the center of God's attention. The land is waiting to be born from the deep. When the waters are drawn back, the land appears as a divine revelation. The function of the sun and moon are to provide signs and seasons for the land. The lights in the sky are to give light to the land. For people who are tuned in to the land as both alive and life-giving, they hear in this Genesis story the close and cooperative relationship that God is establishing with the land. While Auntie Anne's scholars recognize the significance of sun, moon, and stars for signs and seasons, they do not recognize the 7 days of creation. The 7 days comes from a very specific calendar understanding, and it's not universal. For this reason, Auntie Anne and her collaborators have had no qualms about just leaving it out of their translation. When I think of all the angst about the literal or metaphorical 7 days of creation, I find her approach here very refreshing. In verse 24, God says, "Let the land bring forth life." In these words, Auntie Anne and her collaborators hear that the land is not passive. The land is Mother Earth, or better, Mother Land, or even co-creator land. This echoes Indigenous people's experience of the land as the source of shelter, food, water, medicine, spiritual significance, identity, belonging, inclusion, culture, and law. These echoes are part of what identifies this story as an ancestral narrative. Now we turn to verses 26 to 28, which detail the first biblical story about the creation of people. Auntie Anne and her collaborators single out these verses as the first place where there is an obvious and jarring addition to the ancestral narrative of the land coming to life. It sounds quite different from the story that surrounds it. So let's listen to a traditional translation followed by a decolonized reading. And I'm going to ask Suzanne and Uncle Den to help me again for this. Thank you.
Then God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, over domestic animals, over the land, and over everything that creeps on the land." So God formed human beings in his image. In the image of God, he formed them. Male and female, he formed them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the land and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living creature that creeps on the land."
Then the wind, the creator spirit, said to the land, "You have brought forth many land beings. Let us now together make human beings in our image, male and female, and let their nature reflect both land and spirit. Let them be at peace with their kindness land beings, and let them
custodians
of the land." And it happened. Then the wind blessed human land being and said, "It is very good."
So firstly, God decides to make humankind in our image. Now, many movements for justice and equality have found support for their cause in this concept that all are made in the image of God. However, Auntie Anne and her collaborators point out that this part of the creation story breaks the pattern. So far, everything that is made comes from the life-giving force of the land. In contrast to that pattern, suddenly we hear a story of people coming into being from the mind of a group of celestial beings. And then those people are instructed from on high to rule or have dominion over the land and everything in it, and to subdue it. The words used in this biblical text refer to how kings and colonial taskmasters rule. And the verb kadash, which is often translated as subdue, can also be translated as rape. So in this version of the creation story, people are made in the image of a tough colonial landlord who exerts violent control over his subjects. This is deeply problematic for First Nations people, who see land and its creatures as kin, not as property to be exploited, and who have experienced the brutality of colonists, who have used these verses to justify colonization and destructive control over land and people. This is not a God that First Nations people can easily relate to. The alternative decolonized reading of Genesis 1:26-28 that Uncle Den read out is not just something made up that sounds nicer than the original. It is an effort to retrieve the image of God that is consistent with the rest of the story of Genesis 1. An image that looks a lot more like people made in the image of the land by the Creator Spirit, the wind of God. It is an image that aligns more closely with the story of the creation of people in Genesis 2. In Genesis 2, people are identified as ground beings who serve and preserve the land as custodians. This is a very different story from the dominate and subdue story of Genesis 1. Auntie Anne's scholars call the Genesis 2 story an ancestral narrative, one not contaminated by a colonizing mindset. What difference might it have made if the Christians of Britain and Europe had been given an identity as human beings whose fundamental nature reflected both land and spirit, who were at peace with their kindred land beings, and whose responsibility it was to be custodians of the land? What difference might it make for us here now to see all of us people as ground beings, born of land and the wind of God, with plants and animals as our kin, and with responsibility to serve and preserve them all? So let us finish with the poem we heard at the start, inspired by a decolonized reading of Genesis 1. Let us listen deeply with our ears and with our hearts. And let us listen with gratitude for our First Nations sisters and brothers who continue to open our eyes to the Creator Spirit alive in this land.
I am land. Our weight is silently in the womb, the waters of the prime deep, while the Creator Spirit hover over it.
Then one day the waters burst, and I appeared above the waters, alive and excited, as the Spirit gave me a name, land.
Then I was illuminated by the Spirit, and I gave birth to all kinds of living plants, animals, birds, and insects.
The waters around me also gave birth to fish, corals, crabs, and even whales.
In the sky above me, the Spirit inset bright lights for life to flourish within me.
I am land. I not only gave birth to all kinds of land beings, I was also invited by the Creator Spirit to be a partner and create human land beings.
What an event, human land being were born in our image, Spirit and land united in living creatures called human beings.
Yes, I am land, filled with the Spirit and very much alive, with all forms of life.